What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, August 14th, 2018. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the busiest lady in the business, Andrea Renee.
What's good, Greg?
What's good? Your marriage. Is it your marriage? Is your marriage good?
My marriage is rock solid.
Gary
so solid,
fucking
in fact,
Witta.
That despite your valiant attempts to rein in Mr. Witta yesterday.
You just can't sometimes, these Brits.
He just kept going. Really wanted to go down that rabbit hole.
He thought, I think, he could get out of it by digging deeper. Which I don't know if that was
the
right
side.
Apparently, yeah. Only you can say if he did, though.
No, John and I had a nice chat yesterday, and we both agreed that if one of us murdered the other, we would assist in the burial. In fact, we just bought a shovel.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
You guys thought it would tear us apart, but yeah. I say it would bring us together.
If one of you murdered somebody else.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's so good for you guys.
They can't go to court for
love.
It, right? You know
that's
what I mean?
Love.
Double jeopardy. You can't testify against your spouse. There you go.
I mean, John really got the short end of the stick yesterday.
Yeah, I saw his tweet of like, oh, it sucks finding out that all your friends would shoot your wife over you in the divorce, but that's how it goes sometimes. What have you been playing?
I have been playing Destiny 2. I got my resplendent armor. I'm so excited about it.
That's a round of applause today for Andrea.
Rated with the Guardian, the What's Good Guardians on Saturday night. I have my 400 power level armor, which I've been grinding to get. I got that, and now I'm looking forward to jumping into We Happy Few.
Oh, interesting.
I know I got some kind of divisive feedback last week when it came out. Some people really into it, some people really not into it.
Yeah, but you're going to make up your mind for yourself.
That's right, I am.
That's what you do. Busiest lady in the business.
Thanks.
No problem.
How are you? How are things?
I'm good. Things are great. Fire Pro Wrestling world is great.
I saw, and thank you for allowing me to heckle you a little bit on Twitter.
You know it's coming. You know I'm going to make you guys too. It's just I made the rings really great, and then I needed the core cast.
Those rings do look really good.
Right? Yeah, Fire Pro Wrestling. Yeah. Pretty goddamn amazing. PlayStation 4. No embargo, so it's great. I'm just keep saying that. I'm enjoying it. You can check out my Twitter and Instagram for all that. Played Walking Dead Episode 1 last night.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's out.
Out today. Yeah. Enjoyed it. It's definitely, I feel if you are a person, and I'm talking to you, I'm talking about everybody, who dropped out, like did season one and really loved it, and then never really played the other ones or whatever, you're going to have an even better time with this one. Whereas me, I'm like, when I'm like, wow, like this shows how far it's come in terms of cinematography and the way they're directing the action, the way it actually moves. Like it looks like a more overall.
This is all good news.
Exactly. But then when we're like having some conversations, I'm like, kind of remember having this conversation with Luke at the dinner table in season two. You know what I mean? Like,
so you're saying don't go back and play, just jump right in.
And that's the thing is like they do a really great recap in the front where like they loaded in my save and made all the choices and like played out my story again. And it's very clear like how much they're like, man, I met a guy named Lee and he did all this for me. Da, 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 da. And then I kind of met this guy and I kind of met this guy. But now we're here. You know what I mean? And it's kind of like, wow, yeah, the middle seasons really didn't matter that much for the story we're telling. So
okay,
cool.
Then I won't go back and
I think if you jump in sight unseen, you're gonna have an even better time than me, where I was like, all right, I kind of feel like we've had these interactions before, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
But we'll talk about a little bit of Walking Dead later because the trophy list comes up in reader mail. For now, let me tell you, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show. Write in to kindafunny.com/KFGD with your questions, comments, bad PSN names, and everything else under the video game sun. Then watch us record it live at twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. There's a big Twitch fan driving by right now. If you're watching live, of course, you should be going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong and telling us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames and listening on podcast services around the globe. Housekeeping for you. Remember, fan mail this month on patreon.com/kindafunny and patreon.com/kindafunnygames is an autographed photo of Nick Scarpino, the champ. One half of the LaCroix boys. I don't know why Kevin made us do this. Also remember that right now, the Kinda Funny Extra Life t-shirt contest is back. You can submit your designs at kindafunny.com/ELContest by August 31st. Voting begins in September, and the winning design will be printed as the official 2018 Kinda Funny Extra Life community shirt, with proceeds, of course, going towards Extra Life. We're doing it again. Sign up now. Do all that jazz. Kindafunny.com Extra Life, obviously, for the Extra Life stuff. Kindafunny.com/ELContest for the t-shirt contest. And then today, we're brought to you by Brooklinen and Stamps.com, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, Let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. 6 items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Number 0, a breaking news one. I don't know if it would be too much of news, but it's breaking right now that Fandom has laid off, it seems, pretty much their entire editorial team and their entire video team. Not much more information outside of that, but of course, I hope everybody lands on their feet. Thoughts to all of them. If you have jobs that you need talented video and other content producers for, make sure you hit up all those folks. However, number 1 on the Roper Report, Dishonored is taking a break. This is via VG 24/7. And Andrea, can you open this?
Yes.
And find out who wrote this. I did not put a byline on this one, and I don't like doing that. VG 24/7, Dishonored is taking a break. Basically, they sat down with, I didn't even put this name in there too. Oh, here it is. Ricardo Baer, lead designer from Arcane, and had a bunch of stuff. I'm going deep in the article, pulling 2 paragraphs up, and then really starting the article. This is from QuakeCon 2018. Baer says, "I can't say definitively what might happen down the road. Anything could happen, but Dishonored is resting for now. As far as pure immersion sims go, I don't know if we're going to continue to make like Carbon Copy. This qualifies as an immersive sim, and it's the only thing we're ever going to make. The things that are important to us as a studio are coherent, deep world building, environmental storytelling. We're always going to craft spaces that you feel like you're visiting, whether it's Dunwall or Talos 1. It's just as important a character as the player or the people you've met. Then, it's improvisational gameplay. Giving players a bunch of cool abilities and tools, then saying, you figure it out, you be creative, and you own the experience. And typically, we stick to first person. Though, that's not a hard rule, and we might try other things from time to time." I want to get the Dishonored part out there, because that's what the headline a lot of people are leading with. Obviously, a lot of Dishonored fans out there. We'll talk about it in a second. But then, bringing back to the start of the article, really, to connect it. During QuakeCon 2018, I asked Arcane lead designer Ricardo Baer if it's likely we'll see a return to something like The Crossing. "Not literally The Crossing, but for sure some elements," Baer explains. "Being able to incorporate more online sharing or multiplayer type stuff, we totally might do that. It's interesting because for a while there was this push with a bunch of big publishers to force teams to include multiplayer modes. I feel this was super destructive because you end up with a team that's really a team that's made a really compelling single player game, but they were forced to tack on this deathmatch mode or whatever. And as it turns out, it didn't help some of those games anyway. But what I feel like is happening now is way different. It's more community oriented. It's more about what gives your game legs, builds community sharing, and things like that. Games are approaching that with a lot of different models." Andrew, did you find out who wrote this one for me?
I did. It is written by Kirk McKean.
My apologies,
McKean. Kirk. I apologize, Kirk. I don't know how to pronounce your last name.
So 2 things that are interesting out of this thing that he has from QuakeCon. Kirk has this interview from QuakeCon. Of course, Dishonored is resting for now. And then, of course, this conversation down here that it's interesting of incorporating, right, online sharing or multiplayer mode type stuff.
I find that really puzzling that he brings that up, because I think Bethesda games, I immediately think of Wolfenstein, mm-hmm. and how Machine Games very adamantly wanted to keep that first person shooter a single player experience.
Sure.
And it seems to me, from all of the observations I've made, that Bethesda isn't in the business of forcing their developers to make games that they don't want to make.
Right.
Because generally that doesn't turn out well for anybody.
100%.
So I don't know why he's bringing that up.
I think it might be a fact that I think, you know, a lot of people are, I've seen the tweets about Dishonored's taking a break, right? And this is your fault for not buying it, da-da-da-da-da. Which is true to an extent, I would assume. But also, like, well, the market spoke and we didn't want Dishonored. Sorry, people who love Dishonored, that happens.
It was always a cult following.
Exactly. But I think they're hand-in-hand in terms of, Dishonored's taking a rest. The team wants to move on and do something else. And we're interested, right, in how currently games are tackling online, how they're tackling multiplayer in a way that before was, hey, it's the reboot of Tomb Raider with this weird multiplayer nobody really wants, right? Now it can be, like he's talking about, it being how to give your games legs, how to build a community, how to keep an audience like as into Dishonored as that audience is. I'm not saying an online mode would make it better or different, but it would be if you make a game like that that has the cult following, but you have an online mode where they are coming back day after day, week after week. They are using microtransactions for cosmetic items and you're getting hype around it. I think it's easier to build and sustain a community like that rather than Dishonored 1, Dishonored 2, a couple pieces of DLC and be done with it. So yeah, I think it speaks to Arcane trying to figure out what they want to do and reading the tea leaves on what's happening in the industry at large as they see other people figuring it out.
Well, they found a lot of success with Prey, and I think there's a lot of people who want more Prey. I would very much want Prey 2, and I know that they've recently updated the game and that there are other pieces of content that you can play within that universe, but I would like to see them explore that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if Arcane is big enough to support co-development of two major titles at the same time. Maybe they are, but I think that there's nothing wrong with them saying, hey, we have this property. We know people are asking. It's not gone for good. It's just gone for now.
Sure. Yeah, we got to give our developers the time to chew on something else and see what they've come up with. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see as a studio. Dishonored never worked for me. I liked Prey in previews, but when I started playing, it just didn't click at the moment. But I know a lot of people. It's the same thing. Prey, beloved. Dishonored, beloved. It has its audiences. I know they're a talented studio. It'll be interesting to see if they look beyond just what traditional single player is and how you incorporate a community, what that might look like. We shall see. Stay tuned for Bethesda's E3 press conference. 2021, maybe. Maybe 2020. Maybe 2020, but I think 2021 is so we'll see a big blow. Number two, a surprising one. Chief Design Officer of EA, Patrick Söderlund, has left EA. It was announced in a letter from CEO Andrew Wilson, which I'm going to read the excerpt from and then give a little bit from gamesindustry.biz. Today we are announcing that Patrick Söderlund has made the decision to move on from EA. After nearly two decades as a pioneer for our company and industry, he will begin a new chapter later this year. Of course, I'm paraphrasing, jumping all around. From his early vision for Frostbite, which has now become a cornerstone for our technology strategy, to being a champion for players' first experiences, Patrick has always ensured we put creative at the center of everything we do. He has also been unwavering in his commitment to building our pipeline of amazing new games to come, and his fingerprints will be on the experiences that we bring to players well into the future. As Patrick transitions over the next 3 months, it's important that we recognize how deep creativity runs through EA. It's our core DNA, and both Patrick and I agree that we have never had a stronger set of leaders across the company. We're now accelerating into a year where we are delivering some of the most impressive games our studio has ever created, with even more amazing projects in the pipeline. We are pushing forward to offer access to more great games and content through our industry-leading subscription services. Our competitive gaming program is coming off one record-setting season and heading straight into the next with even higher aspirations. As a company, our culture of creativity and pioneering for our players is powering every step we take. Thanks again, Patrick. He will always be part of our EA family. And thank you all for leading us forward. And then gamesindustry.biz tosses in this little bit of stuff. Söderlund has been at Electronic Arts for 12 years, having joined when the publisher acquired Battlefield developer DICE in 2006. He's held multiple senior positions at the company, most recently taking the role of chief design officer as part of an internal reshuffle early this year. Andrea, what's it all mean?
It's hard to know. It's possible that he just has run his course at EA and has decided he wants to try something different.
Sure.
Maybe he's like, hey, I've been, you know, had my, he's been working really hard for a really long time and he just needs to take an extended break.
Sure.
You know, we've seen some other developers do this recently who said, like, I've been working really hard for so many years that I just need time to reconnect with my family or to work on personal projects, whatever that may be. What's interesting about this story is the context that Kotaku gave about how much money he recently got from EA to stay. So let me just pull up that right now so I make sure to not misquote the dollar amounts. Because it was tweeted out this morning. So last year, when he attempted to exit the company, he received a enormous bonus, $20 million, in fact, in 2017. Dang, yeah. So according to the SEC filings, he made $48.3 million just last year. So that was an attempt for them to incentivize him to stay around. And clearly, he got his paycheck, and now he's like,
sure.
His feelings must not have changed.
Yeah.
I also think it's interesting that somebody on Twitter tweeted to me and was like, hey, do you think it's coincidental that EA has announced their new moral compass objective, and now Soderlund is leaving. And I was like, I don't think it's coincidental. My time with EA when I was hosting with them at EA Play earlier this year indicated to me that they've been talking about this for quite some time, and if, that this is a message that they've been wanting to turn around since the Battlefront fiasco last year, and that they are really trying to make concerted efforts to win back players who feel like they've been slighted or are otherwise upset with EA's practices as a whole, because the previous leadership was really focused all about profits. Clearly, EA had a record fiscal year, which is why Patrick got such a gigantic bonus. And they realized that that came at a cost. And now they're trying to figure out, how do we go back to a place where obviously financials matter as a publicly traded company, but also players matter, and we want to put players first, and how do we get back to that?
What is the moral compass elevator pitch, if somebody missed that earlier?
Yeah, so over on, it's been written up a couple times.
It's come up in a bunch of interviews they've done recently.
Yeah, so this broke last week, actually, so it's not like brand new news today. But over on comicbook.com, there's a write-up here from Liana over there, and she writes that EA's VP of Strategic Growth, Matt Bilby, recently sat down with GamesIndustry.biz to discuss the hot waters of microtransactions, especially with so many countries trying to ban them for gambling. He said, quote, "I believe that we're working through those specific groups at the moment is an education, not meant in a patronizing way, but just helping them understand how we design the games and the notion of choice and commitment to making the games fair and fun. We learned a lot from Star Wars Battlefront." I'm going to skip ahead here. And he says, so how are they going to make sure that lesson stays in place? Bilby explains, "I ran a team internally with Patrick post-Battlefront to actually redesign our game development framework and testing platforms to ensure we're giving our game teams the right guidance. We'll call it an EA moral compass.
At
the beginning of development, so we're designing our live service early. We're testing it early, testing it with gamers who are giving us feedback, so we ensure those pillars of fairness, value, and fun are true." So that story came out last week that they have made this commitment and have this moral compass. And Patrick was part of that framework. So I don't think that there's a conclusion to draw between him exiting at this time and them talking publicly about this moral compass at this time.
Sure.
Clearly, if he tried to leave last year and they incentivized him financially to stay, he's still had the desire to leave in the back of his mind.
Yeah, of course.
So money can only hold over that for so long.
True.
Once you are making that many millions of dollars, if you're truly unhappy, the money's not going to be the thing that gets you to stay.
Sure. But just doing nothing with all that money would be great. You know what I mean?
I mean,
can you imagine making all that money and then you're just like, you know what? Now I'm going to buy a modest house in the middle of America and just play video games. That's the dream, Andrew.
You know what I've learned, though? People that are at that level of wealth want to keep making that level of wealth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
You know, like rich people just want to get richer.
Fucking rich people.
Very
few
people have I met. And granted, I haven't met like a lot of like...
You're like, when I go to my Fortune 500 dinners.
I haven't
dinners.
Met that many multimillionaires.
Yeah.
But a couple of them that I have
had... Patreon's doing well.
We are doing very well. We appreciate all the support at patreon.com/whatsgoodgames. But I have found that they are incentivized and motivated to want to do more stuff, invest
maintain
in more companies,
do VC,
whether it be charitable works or whatever. They aren't just sitting around doing nothing. But then again, there are some people that do that.
I'll see what Patrick does soon enough, I guess. That's not a transition.
I highly doubt he's gone for good.
I'm
pretty sure he's just going to take a little break, and then we'll see him in a leadership role somewhere else.
Pop back up. Now it's who's going to come out and talk at the EA press conference next year. Can't wait to see. Another person to come out.
I know, right? Yeah.
Do you know? Are you doing that again?
What's happening?
Have you already been rehearsing?
I have no idea.
No? Number three on the Roper Report. This is a super simple one. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4's Blackout beta has been announced. You can get it September 10th. They also announced that inside Blackout, you'll have solo, duos, and quads as you go out and do your Battle Royale Call of Duty stuff.
I'm excited to try Blackout.
Yeah.
It looks fun.
Yeah, no, I'm interested.
I mean, I know people were kind of disappointed that it wasn't in the first beta, but, you know.
Here you go. Now I got this another beat. You know what I mean? That's what people want, them PR beats. Here you go.
Mm-hmm.
Remind you this game's still coming. Number four, PlayStation's announced the best sellers on the PSN for July 2018. Your top 10 for the PlayStation 4 read like this: Grand Theft Auto 5. Yes, it will not stop and it never will. 2, Rocket League. 3, No Man's Sky. 4, FIFA 18. 5, Destiny. 6, Darksiders War Mastered Edition. Number 7, Minecraft PlayStation 4 Edition. Number 8, Fallout 4. Number 9, Need for Speed. Number 10, Horizon Zero Dawn Complete Edition. Definitely a quiet month for obviously new games, but No Man's Sky there at number 3. Look at that. A resurgence. The
Absolutely.
Redemption story.
That update
so
worked for them.
God bless them.
Over GTA on, 5 holding at number one.
You know what I mean? What are they going to do? They're just going
to
keep
They're
going
to have to release a new game to knock their own game off the
right?
list.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And see how long they can run dual top 10s there. PlayStation VR, meanwhile, reads like this. Top 10, Rick and Morty. Number 2, PlayStation VR Worlds. Number 3, Job Simulator. Number 4, Super Hot VR. Number 5, Drive Club VR. Number 6, Arizona Sunshine. Number 7, Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. Number 8, Doom VFR. Number 9, the Skyrim VR. And then number 10, Static. Rick and Morty's still there. And then pretty much all the launch games from PlayStation VR. Nobody buying Island Time, huh?
Did you not get the new date about keep talking and nobody explodes?
The non-VR edition?
Coming to Switch?
We talked about a new date for a non-VR version yesterday. Was it on Switch? I cannot recall.
I have a Switch code in my inbox.
What's the date?
It got sent today.
No, I'm saying give a shout out in case maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I talked about an Xbox version of Keep Talking, Nobody Explodes. What is the date for the Switch version releasing?
They don't have a date here. Let me look it up.
Okay. Look into it. I think we did, but I can never be sure. And you don't need to you're wrong me. Well, actually, you're wrong me, because did I talk about this already? I don't know.
You probably did.
Who knows? You were so hung up on Gary Whitta trying to sink your marriage in this fucking hypothetical universe. You keep looking. I'm going to read the next one, okay?
Go for it.
Number 5, Crash Bandicoot is still killing it in the UK. This is Hayden Taylor over at gamesindustry.biz. Hayden writes, Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy finds itself at the top of the charts for a 7th consecutive week, despite releasing over a year ago. Only 3 games launched this month appeared in the UK /GFK, all formats top 40. Madden NFL 19 appeared at number 5, while sequel to the indie darling Overcooked came in at number 8, beating out Compulsion Games' highly anticipated We Happy Few, which sits at number 10. Look at Crash Bandicoot still kicking over there. 7 consecutive weeks at top number 1. But then, also number one, awesome that people in the UK understand Madden is real football and soccer's dumb, and they're supporting that. And then also that Overcooked and Indie Darling is right there. Yeah, I love Overcooked. I'm glad that's happening too. And then, hey, We Happy Few. You know what I mean? Week to week, new game's getting some love over there. We'll see how...
August 16th.
Oh, for Keep Talking, Nobody Explodes?
Mm-hmm.
Non-VR edition? Switch. Got it. Number 6, we got an acquisition for you. Sumo Digital has picked up the Chinese room. This is from Matthew Handrahan over at gamesindustry.biz, who writes, the Sumo Group has acquired the Chinese Room, the UK developer of Dear Esther and Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. The Chinese Room will now be part of Sumo Digital, its 4th in the UK and 5th studio worldwide. Quote, Sumo will provide the support and expertise I'm looking for to take the Chinese Room to the next level, said Dan Pinchbeck, one of the founders of the studio. Our aim is to build on the reputation I'm proud to have earned to create a truly world-class studio delivering bold, imaginative new games, end quote. Pinchbeck confirmed that the Chinese Room is already working on new concept and is in discussions with partners about games that are already in various stages of development. So congratulations there. We'll see what happens. Did you play Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, Dear Esther?
I did. I never finished it, though.
Me too. Same thing, yeah. Talented studio. Interesting to see what happens. I know there was the hullabaloo after the game released of the blog about how tough development was. So hopefully Sumo can alleviate some of those problems. But, Andrea.
Yes, Greg.
They're going to be working on these games a long time before we see anything.
True.
I wish games came out today. Wait, they did? Andrea, where would I go to find what came to the mom and grop shops, digitals, and whatnots?
Greg, you would go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today. It's a long one. It's Tuesday. 2064 Read Only Memories Definitive Edition is on Switch. The Bard's Tale Trilogy is on PC. Cosmic Star Heroine is on Switch. Death's Gambit is on PlayStation 4 and PC. Detective Gallo is on PlayStation 4. Dog Gone Golfing is on PlayStation 4. Please do. Domino Craft VR is on PlayStation VR. Fall of Light is on Xbox One. Guns, Gore, and Cannoli 2 is on PlayStation 4. Phantom Doctrine is on PlayStation 4. Super Knight Riders is on PlayStation 4. Tanglewood is on PC. Terratech is on PlayStation 4. Vroom Kaboom is on PlayStation 4. Wailing Heights is on PlayStation 4. Warface enters early access on PlayStation 4. The Walking Dead, the final season, Episode 1, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. World of Warcraft, Battle for Azeroth, officially out, even though it did release yesterday. We talked about it yesterday. And then they've also added backwards compatibility on Xbox One for Tomb Raider Legend and Tomb Raider Anniversary. What do you got for me when it comes to Dog Gone Golfing?
It looks like a game you might actually enjoy. It's a dog golfing.
He's just doing it
there. And so it looks like they get increasingly difficult. So this is a VR release?
No. It's just PlayStation 4. Okay, Domino Craft VR is PlayStation VR.
Because it came out on PC, it looks like, last year.
Gotcha. Huh. There you go. New dates for you. Battle X Birth of the Alliance comes to Oculus Rift and HTC Vive on September 10th, 2018, with a PlayStation VR version following in early 2019. A Battle Royale mode joins the fray in Q2 2019. Dark Souls Remaster for Nintendo Switch finally has a date, and it's October 19th, 2018. And then Hacky Zack will be bouncing its way of the Nintendo Switch on the 23rd of August. Deals of the day. Guess what? There's a whole bunch. From Xbox officially, there's some new Xbox controllers. Keep your controller collection as current as your Xbox Game Pass membership. Today, there are two new Xbox controller options to choose from. The Xbox Wireless Controller Phantom Black Special Edition and the Xbox Wireless Controller Gray/Blue. The Phantom Black Special Edition will ship to retailers on September 11th for $69.99. The Gray-Blue Controller will ship to retailers in the U.S. and Canada on September 25th and be available worldwide October 9th for $64.99. Both are available to pre-order today in the Microsoft Store, and or at the Microsoft Store, and then online at this Microsoft Store.
I want to sneak something in before you continue.
Phantom Black is very translucent, just like the PlayStation. That's back. It's big. Jeff Keighley was like, translucent, hard, referrals, real big. What do you got for me?
There's another free weekend for Rainbow Six Siege beginning on August 16th. So if you've heard us talk about it, if you've seen the party mode, if you want to try it out for yourself for free, starting August 16th.
Meanwhile, Call of Duty and Battlefield are having a big sale on Xbox. Lots of old versions of those are available for sale there. Meanwhile, Derek wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, "Hey Greg and friends, I don't see any outlets mentioning this, and I figured I'd give you guys a heads up that The Division is having a free week of its amazing DLC Survival for 1 week as of Thursday, August 16th. It is, in my opinion, one of the best DLCs available, and definitely gives The Division a real good spin." Emmett Watkins Jr. also wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, "Howdy y'all. And deal of the day for you guys on PC, Steam specifically. Until 10 a.m. Pacific tomorrow, Insurgency is free to own on Steam. It's a multiplayer and military shooter with a focus on realism, and I've heard a lot of great things about it. Furthermore, owning Insurgency will get you a 10% discount on the upcoming sequel, Insurgency Sandstorm. And if you pre-order the sequel before it drops on September 18th, you get an additional 10%, bringing the cost of the sequel down from $30 to $24. Have a great day. Emmett Watkins Jr." Thank you all for those deals writing in. You know what I mean? I'm just here talking about controllers. You got crazy deals on Insurgency. Awesome. Andrea.
Yes, Craig.
It's time to check in with the readers, but first, I'm going to tell you their questions are brought to you by Brooklinen and Stamps. Brooklinen.com. I tell you all the time, I sleep in Brooklinen sheets. They're amazing. They're awesome. You go to Brooklinen.com. You get to mix and match patterns and colors, and you get to see it all lay out, and you can hold up your computer and look around. You look around your bed. You hold it up. You're like, this would look good with my decor, as they say.
So it's augmented reality?
No, I'm just saying you put it on your laptop, and then you look at your laptop, and you look at your room. Look at your laptop. Look at your room. Okay. Look at, you know, no, it's not augmented reality. It's just, I mean, it kind of is. You know what I mean?
I'm just saying some apps do that these days.
Well, they don't, all right? Brooklinen was named the winner of the best of online betting category in Good Housekeeping. It's the fastest growing betting brand in the world. These are luxury sheets without the luxury markup. Their method is to take out the middleman, keep things personal just between them and the customer. I love my Brooklinen sheets, as I've said a million times, and you can go to brooklinen.com right now and get an exclusive offer for you, the listener. You can get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code GAMES at brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so sure you'll love the new sheets that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all their sheets and comforters. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use the promo code GAMES at brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com, promo code GAMES, Brooklinen. These really are the best sheets ever. Ooh, and then
they've got a new pattern, too.
Oh, do they really? Let me see. I haven't looked.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they got a whole bunch of new stuff on there since I was asking. Next one, stamps.com. You know what sucks? Leaving your house. And stamps.com, make sure you never will. These days, you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcast. You can listen whenever you want and whenever it's convenient for you. Did you know you can even get postage on demand? All you need is stamps.com. With stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package. It's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click print mail, and you're done. Stamps.com even sends you a free digital scale. How do we know? Because we have it here. No more having to go anywhere. We Cool Greg, send this. He puts in the scale, prints out the label, puts it on there, hands it to the postman. We're done. We can keep doing whatever the hell it is we do around here. You can do that whatever the hell you do at home that same way. right now. Use KF Games, one word, for this special offer. A four-week trial. It includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in KF Games. That's stamps.com. Enter KF Games. Stamps.com. Where do I want to go next? Where do we want to jump in? You know what I'm saying, Andrea? Lots of questions. Lots of questions today. Obviously, I'm going to give you... Oh, here, you know what? We'll start with an appetizer.
Okay.
Nathan Steele writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, Greg, the trophy/achievement list for the final season of The Walking Dead is a massive change of pace from the traditional Telltale Games easy completion. For starters, it has collectibles, but also what appear to be missable trophies that would probably require a guide to realistically complete in one playthrough. What's worse is that reading the names of some of the trophies seems to indicate that some of them might even be specifically dependent on choices made in the playthrough. With no chapter select, at least in the first episode, this means that there might be multiple playthroughs required, or worse, one playthrough done in a specific manner, where I'm making the decisions just to get the trophy and not play the narrative as I would actually like to. Also, even just checking in a guide might accidentally induce spoilers. Come on, Telltale! I played every one of your games, yes, even Guardians and all of Minecraft, and generally enjoyed myself. But as a huge achievement hunter, this is really discouraging. Thanks. I hope you and the chicken are still keeping these things fresh after all these years. Nate. It's a long question, Nate, but I hear you. I saw, of course, people tweeting me ahead of time. Hey, Greg, trophies are different this time. And I was like, don't even want to know. Don't even want to worry about it. Going to play the game, because sometimes you jump in there, you will see spoilers in the trophy lists. Not about that. Beat it last night. Then, as soon as I opened Twitter beating it, I saw Ray Navarez Jr., of course, twitch.tv/brownman, complaining about, like, the same thing. Of, like, this sucks. Like, you have to make a difference. You have to do this, and there's no chapter select. And it's like, yeah, I hear you. I think it's just we've been spoiled so long, Andrea, with the idea of, hey, you're just going to get the platinum by playing. You're just going to get all the achievements by playing. Don't worry about it. Although, I did find myself playing the game how I normally wouldn't play the game. Because now that there are collectibles, it was like, oh, clearly Clem has to go over there and do that thing. But I'm going to go to every aspect of the room before I do that. And I was like, meh. I didn't like that because I did take away from the narrative experience my trophy addiction to this thing. However, I found all the collectibles in the first playthrough. However, there is a major choice towards the end of the game that I will need to replay all the way through to do it.
Considering you went through the painstaking work of getting the Detroit Become Human trophy, exactly. I don't understand why this is such a big deal considering it is a significantly shorter thing to play.
For the record, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think it's a change. I don't necessarily like it. I think when I originally read about it, I was like, who cares? And then last night when I was like, oh, well, I'm wandering around and I found a fucking deer skull. Now I want to see what else is around here. That was weird, but it didn't totally detract from the narrative. And it does give you a reason to go back and replay it. I was already doing that with, especially when I reviewed them, going back and replaying to see how choices branched other ways and stuff like that. So yeah, Nate, the answer is yeah, it's still not that big of a commitment. I played episode one last night. It felt longer, but I took breaks to talk to Jen and stuff. It felt longer than the traditional Walking Dead opening episode. However, I don't think, yeah, playing it twice is going to be that big of a deal. And on your second playthrough is really when I would say use the guide and actually look through how you're going to do everything and, you know, screw yourself over and reveal everything there because you'll have already known. But yeah, it's an interesting change of pace, and I do hope for episode two, if they're going to do this, put chapter select in there would be nice. So it is like, okay, cool. I only missed this one. Like, right now, I'm short two trophies. They're going to require me, from what I read. I just see you glaze over. Two trophies to play through, what, two-thirds of episode one, and then once I get the pop the trophy for doing what I need to do, immediately quit out. That way, I come back in and get to do the other choice there. Weird. But, you know?
Cool.
Nobody listens to me, Andrea, when I say they should help me and let me do it all over here and stuff like this. Kevin from Oregon writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, Greg and Andrea, I'm sure you're sick and tired of questions about the IGN/plagiarism/Philip incident, but it really got me thinking about how stressful writing reviews must be when you don't have any idea of what other people will think of a game. Most of us live in a world where we can play a game, hear what others thought of it, consider their points, and then decide for ourselves what we think. Do you remember your first time writing a review, or in Andrea's case, giving initial thoughts/reactions for a game without knowing what everybody else thought? Or do you talk with peers about it too, a bit too? Would love to hear what your experience was. Thanks. Keep doing what you do to the chicken, Jesus. I don't actually get this reference, but everyone says it. Peace. Kevin from Oregon.
Way back when, Greg.
Yeah, lay it on.
When I was just starting out in the video games business.
A wee lass.
I actually did a review for Super Mario Galaxy 2, which I believe is still up on my YouTube channel.
Okay.
You can tell how old it is because I had to film gameplay with a camera on screen because I could not afford capture equipment way back then. Very few outlets had that. And I remember writing it and recording it and making this review and being like super proud of myself. But then realizing afterwards, I didn't consider so many other parts of the game once I started looking at other people's coverage. And I think this is something that a lot of people who talk about games critically run into, because sometimes, especially if we get code pre-review or pre-launch and there's these really stiff embargoes that have a lot of like, you can't talk about this, 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 and this, we can sometimes be a little hesitant to reach out to people we know who work in the industry to ask for their opinions on things because we don't know who has it and who doesn't.
Yeah.
And I definitely can speak for myself in saying that it does cause me caused me a little bit of anxiety knowing that what if I just was reading something completely wrong in the game, or what if I was doing something completely the wrong way, and or maybe I really liked this thing and I didn't see its flaws, or maybe I really hated this thing and didn't see its high points. And you're always going to run into that when you are reviewing anything.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if it's necessarily beneficial to do a lot of extensive work talking to your peers, because I think sometimes that helps, or that influences your decision or your opinions in not the most positive way.
Yeah. No, you're right. I think it's an interesting case study, because I think it's more likely than not that, let's take it at IGN, or even Kind of Funny, I guess, we're all playing God of War. I'm going to talk to Andy and Tim about what they're thinking and how they like it. But I'm usually coming in already with what the formulation of my review would be. I remember when we did play God of War, and it was like I was like, I'm in love with this game. I think it's going to be, you know, I'm in love. It's game of the year so far for me. And Tim's like, man, I don't agree at all right now. And he was in the early part of it. And later he turned that corner and got there. But him not enjoying that first part didn't take away from my enjoyment of the first part.
Right.
And I think at IGN, we had those conversations all the time. Walking Dead in particular, me and Mitch would always go home and play the new episode. And then the next morning, go into a conference room and get coffee and just talk about what we did differently. Yeah, it happens with the peer discussion, but I don't think the peer discussion is usually happening in a way that is, hey, like, what did you think? Because I'm writing my review. I want to put in some of your thoughts. It's more like, here's what I think. And that's always a good point of like, it sucks that you couldn't do this. I'm like, well, no, you totally can do that. You just have to do this, that upgrade. Yeah, da, da, da.
Right.
In terms of, you know, is there pressure? Of course there's pressure. Like, do you remember writing a review and not knowing? I mean, that's every time. And so it's usually the big games that I'll sit there and like, when I'm always, first off, worried that I'm going to break an embargo. That I'm going to put it in YouTube's back end and something's going to go wrong and it's going to go early. So I'm usually antsy about that. Or that even, you know, it says 12:01 a.m. is the embargo. But of course, YouTube sets it at 12. And I'm like, that's fine. But like, what if a tweet gets out before then? I'm always worried about something fucking up. But oftentimes I will sit there and click to other people's review to see if we're in line. Because I don't care about being the outlier, but it's always fascinating to see, especially for a game I really, really dig, if I'm going to be. If people, I think Horizon was that way with us, where I was, maybe it was Uncharted 4, but it was where I was like, I want to see what everybody else thinks about this game because I liked it so much. The one where it totally not, I feel like usually the consensus is the majority, and I'm right there with people of like, I feel that I can see a good game and know if it's a bad game. For me, the one that when this kind of question comes up for me is always I Am Alive. Do you remember this game?
Oh, yeah.
This weird...
I saw that game at CES, of all places.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember I was so excited for it. It sounded like a cool idea. They got it, and I thought it was just a piece of shit. And I just did not think it was a good game. And I'll never forget. It was GDC. I was going into the tunnel, and the review published on IGN, and it popped up. And I want to say it was a 4.5, but it was something like that, where it wasn't good. And I saw it go up. I'm like, great. And went into the tunnel. And something happened, of course, because it's the Muni or whatever. It's like 25 minutes later, I surfaced and had connection again. And I went on there. And I was like, I wonder what it was like. Let's look at Twitter. And so many people were just like, GameSpot gave it a 9. These people gave it an 8. Blah, blah. And I was like, oh, fuck. I am the outlier by like a mile here. Like, everybody else is like, this game's really good. And I was like, this game is garbage. And it was interesting of like,
that
wow.
That happens, though. There's always an outlier on every game.
And reading their reviews didn't make me go, man, I really fucked up. It was like, no, we just did not appreciate the same things about this game. And so it was just rare that I felt like I was ever that far out, right? Like, mm-hmm. I've definitely been higher or lower and all that stuff. But it's like, for it to be like, everybody else is like, yeah, it's pretty good. And me to be like, this thing fucking sucks. And I was like, wow, I didn't see that coming. And that was always one that stuck with me. While we're here in this thread, because what's happening today is we're no longer, of course, I feel like plagiarism, IGN, Philip, and stuff. It's not the news anymore. Now it's the fallout and the ripple questions to it. I want to jump over to Bipartisan Gamer, who wrote in with a lengthy one, but he told me I could edit at will, so I did. He starts, though, "Hello, Kinda Funny Games Daily. This may be a long one, but I feel it's important." Then he kind of recapped all the Philip stuff and IGN stuff and plagiarism stuff. So here we go. I'm cutting all that out and going here because you already know this stuff. "I am tired of hearing the relentless harassment and campaigns to ruin people's lives, whether a person is in the wrong or not. Why is this okay? Why do we relentlessly attack people we don't know in an attempt to destroy them, both professionally and personally, full well knowing if we found ourselves in that person's shoes, we would wish for the benefit of the doubt? Why is it okay for someone to be a liberal in the games industry, but come off slightly conservative and you're a Nazi racist bigot? In the same breath, if you say something about female characters in games not being simply not being simple, sexy plot devices, why are you an SJW and a snowflake? Why is it okay to be attacked for offering someone the benefit of the doubt and a platform to defend themselves? I've always dreamed of being a part of the video game industry, period. I love games and healthy discussions of them. It's what led me to start a podcast and a blog page about video games. But I found myself losing my passion, not for games themselves, but for finding healthy avenues to discuss them in the industry. The amount of terrible stories I've heard from video game personalities makes me question why it's worth it. Is the games industry as a whole responsible for this? Or for it, I should say. Does Kinda Funny itself bear any burden for reporting on these stories and giving the trolls, for lack of a better word, the platform they clearly desire? Thanks for the time, Chuck, the Bipartisan Gamer." Chuck put in his initial part that I cut out too, of like, you might have seen I haven't written it as much, because Bipartisan Gamer been around Kinda Funny Games Daily for quite some time. An interesting question, an interesting take.
The short answer is it's not okay to attack people like this.
That is the answer.
And it doesn't matter if it's in the video games field or if it's in another field. The mob mentality that's happening on social media these days is really quite disgusting. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this a little bit with all of the ninja stuff that was happening. We could relate to the Philip stuff. I mean, there's a lot of different scenarios that you can look at for people really just dogpiling. And the really challenging part is, or the really frustrating part, is that people are dogpiling without all the information, without all the facts, without hearing all of the evidence. And even if you did have all the evidence, maybe still don't dogpile.
Yeah.
Maybe try to have some critical thought. No one's saying you can't express your opinions and you can't use your freedom of speech to say what you want. But we always talk about being better to each other and putting out positivity into the universe instead of negativity. And I think that this is clear in this case, too. You know, I don't think we're ever going, short of Philip coming out and, you know, really laying it bare, as Gary was talking yesterday, I don't think we're ever going to know all the details about what happened. And that's okay. We don't need to.
Yeah.
We're not the judge, jury, and executioner for this case, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's really frustrating as somebody who has been, you know, the target of some of these harassment campaigns in the past, that people feel empowered to be really gross in online spaces, and I don't understand that.
Yeah, that's the thing I disagree with, Bipartisan Gamer. You're talking here, does Kinda Funny itself bear any burden for reporting on these stories and giving the trolls, for lack of a better word, the platform they desire? Have we ever reported on one of these stories and said, man, these trolls who are harassing somebody are getting it right? No. The news of the plagiarism and the Philip stuff and the news of Ninja Stance and the discussion about that is what it is, and that's in the gaming world, and we're going to talk about that, but I'm not talking about the horrible things, and we tell you not to be horrible to people. And the same thing I said yesterday about a lot of this stuff comes back to it, Bipartisan Gamer, is that you aren't required to give trolls any time or any avenue. And when you see someone, when you look at a response or something and it's out of left field and it's taking us, mute the person and move on. Like, you're not going to get in an argument and change their mind. You're not going to do it. The problem you run into on Twitter and social media in general, but Twitter, where I mainly inhabit outside of Instagram, but in terms of discussion, right, is that Twitter is used, I mean, people throw out on hot takes, but I throw out on more, Twitter's used the way, by a lot of people, the way I would talk to around the water cooler. A conversation I would have with Poe back in the day, and I'm talking about like video games and what I think of this and what I played last night, and here's this cool screenshot I'm showing. When it gets into this kind of thing where everybody's mad because Philip has plagiarized, it appears, and ruined the reputation of IGN in some regards, like that, it becomes this swirl of emotions because everyone's having those emotions. They want to express those emotions, so they put them out there. And rather than it just be me at home anymore telling Poe that I'm upset about something that happened on the internet, I'm now putting it out there and tagging him, that's going to him. And it's like, that person knows they fucked up. When I fuck up and people hit me up, I know I fucked up. You don't need to pile on. When, you know, people put in the comments of a video like, Greg's gained weight. Like, yeah, I know. Or I've lost weight or whatever. Like, you know what's happening, right? Like, it's this weird thing of where the line is for discussion, but then there's clearly people who don't want to have a discussion. That's the biggest thing, is I see it on my comments all the time. I put up something, someone comes in, takes a swing at me and is an asshole, and I mute them, or they were already muted and I never saw the response, have my cup of coffee, hang out with Jen and Portillo and don't care. And then audience members, best friend members come in like, well, no, you don't understand, Greg, and this, that, and the other. And they start trying to have a rational conversation. And then I still can't see the person that I'm muted, but they're not. And I see it start to escalate. And it's like, when you fire off the first volley in an online conversation and that person responds back with, you fucking SJW snowflake, you fucking Nazi bigot for something you said, and that's not clearly not what's really happening, that's when you go mute, disengage, and you're done. Block them, whatever you want to do. Like, you're not going to win hearts and minds that way. Like, the people who are entrenched and want to be professional trolls aren't going to change that way. And that's the thing, is like, you need to curate it. And that's Bipartisan Gamer, you need to curate who you're following, what they're following, and support the people who are doing it right, and not shun in terms of social media wise, or, you know, your views, your clicks, your thumbs up, your subscriptions, your Patreons, the people who aren't doing it right. And that's how it all nets out, right? The fact, if you want to get in and wade in the shit, and you want to get in there and get into comments, and you want to argue with all these people, that's all you're going to get back. If you want to get up there and post shirtless Spider-Man photos, you're going to have a pretty good time. Where do I want to go next? Did I nail it? Is that good?
You nailed it.
Okay, good. Oh, do I want to go here? Yeah, we got good questions today. You know what I mean? I want to keep the good. Oh, here we go. Keeping me honest. Bjorn, last question on your sheet. Bjorn writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, long time, first time. Greg told Jason Schreier that he would ask Pete Hines about Bethesda blacklisting Kotaku. Has Greg kept his word on this? Love everything you guys do. If you don't remember, when Jason was on co-hosting with me, he brought up this, or I brought up that story, or vice versa. And I was like, oh yeah, I heard that, and the thing, is that real? And he's like, yeah, it's what we've heard, and blah, blah, and he's like, they've never got a comment. And I was like, Pete's on the shows. Next time Pete's on a show, I'll ask. And I will. That's the thing. I didn't, when we called before the E3 press conference, not the right time. Some people in the chat that night were like, what is a 5 minutes before? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking when Pete comes in for an interview again, we're going to talk about it. And in the same breath, I'm not going to text him now for some off the record conversation. That's something we brought up on this show. I want to address on this show. I want to have a conversation in front of you guys. I don't want to do it back there. So no, I haven't, but yes, I will. It's always on my mind whenever Pete comes back through here. Ryan, you don't like that?
No.
Why? Some people like beatboxing.
Okay.
Are you not one of them?
No.
When Matt Scarpino or Nick does it, do you like it?
Yeah, but they got talent.
Oh, man.
Oh,
Kevin, cut another cord. I know I'm not as good. It's insane how good it is. Ryan writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, Greg, you seem happy about Bethesda possibly not bringing Elder Scrolls Legends to PlayStation 4 just because PlayStation 4 won't allow crossplay. Isn't that far more anti-consumer on Bethesda's part than anything PlayStation's done? Bethesda would be punishing PlayStation 4 players for something that Sony's doing, and no way in hell is it worth it on their part, considering all the sales they lose by not bringing their game to PlayStation. I'm calling their bluff. It's a good bluff to call, Ryan.
Yep, I was really kind of
cringy,
internally screaming with listening to you guys talk about this yesterday.
Lay it on me, you have the floor.
Because you and Gary kind of took this position that PlayStation is the kid who thinks they're too cool to share, and they're off in their corner being too cool for everybody else.
That was literally Gary's thing, but yeah.
Yes, you're right. It was Gary's thing. But you kind of were like, yeah, maybe they are being like that. And here's the thing. There isn't a publisher that I can think of that would ever not publish on PlayStation purely out of spite, or purely because they wouldn't allow them to have crossplay. Because PlayStation 4 has over 80 million units worldwide.
Cha-ching.
That is a gigantic audience that you are just saying goodbye to because of this one thing that you're trying to do with your game. Which is why Pete very specifically didn't mention any of their other games outside of Legends.
Right.
And Legends is currently available on PS4. So potentially, if they do launch this crossplay the way that Pete was describing it, it's possible that you'll be able to play the previous version and not play the new version, which would be fine because then they still have their audience built in, who probably has more than enough players to matchmake with within the PlayStation ecosystem.
Yeah.
And as I was saying earlier today, people who make a lot of money, people like Epic Games, who makes a ton of money on PlayStation, having Fortnite there, are not going to leave PlayStation because they don't allow cross-play or cross-progression. Because guess who likes making money? People with money.
Sure. You so gotta keep that money wrong.
I was just like, I was listening to you guys yesterday going like, you're thinking about this all wrong. I understand the intention and where it's coming from and how gamers really want this and how it would be really nice if when I boot up the Division 2 next year and I
another can, Gary thing where I'm like, that's a bridge play, too far, but okay.
I could play, you know, with people on multi-platform.
Sure.
But I don't think that that's going to happen. And it's not, quite frankly, going to ruin my day if it doesn't.
Sure.
You know,
you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
I have friends on both platforms, and I'm happy to play with my friends that have the system that I'm playing on.
Of course, you're not wrong at all, Andrea. And you raise good points. And you know, of course, the money thing isn't. I think the excitement in what you're referencing here, Ryan, right, is the idea that, and Polygon just put up an article again today of like, PlayStation's got away with this kind of thing, basically, of like the, you know, how Fortnite was a big deal. This whole, you can't cross play, you can't cross account, and it's just blown over because they said the right things and now it's over with. I think the interesting here, as you say, no publisher's ever done what you're talking about. I think it's the idea that things keep happening in this industry that we never thought would happen, and things keep changing. And so when you do see this bleeding edge of video games right now, if suddenly you can cross play on different things, what would possibly maybe force Sony's hand, or what does it mean for a different publisher, developer? Where does all this happen? You don't really know what's going to happen next. And so the idea that Bethesda would be like, on some grand scale, fuck it, our game's not going there, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's already there. You know what I mean? Like, maybe the version they're talking about doesn't happen. It's just nice in terms of the hypothesis and the discussion of how do you make PlayStation do it? Like, again, it's a brilliant PR move from Bethesda right now of like, hey, like, get people behind them, the people who are mad about this, have them. Would we be talking about Elder Scrolls Legends twice this week? Notwithstanding the announcements for QuakeCon, two times in this show now? No. And it is another putting Bethesda in a very positive consumer light.
But that game isn't big enough to move the needle.
Oh, 100%. And that's why they're making the fight on that game, right?
I think, you know, it was interesting hearing, you know, Gary bring up the example of Activision, which I kind of laughed at because Call of Duty has a gigantic contract with PlayStation to bring their content to PlayStation first. Yeah. So if anybody was going to make a stand down the line, it would maybe be Activision, but they're not going to make that stand because they've made a deal with PlayStation.
Yeah, they have money in contracts, you know?
And Epic could potentially have enough of an audience to move the needle there, but as you guys mentioned yesterday, they published Fortnite before cross-play and cross-progression was something that they were implementing in that game, and so they implemented it afterwards, and so to try to go back and say, well, we're going to take the game off the platform,
sure,
and lose this gigantic audience that they have.
Yeah,
it's just like, it's frustrating all around because we as gamers want it to happen, but I think we need to stop beating our heads against a wall and just recognize that PlayStation has acknowledged that the conversation is happening. They've come out and said, we hear you. We're working on it.
This is what the Polygon article said, though. We're letting off the hook. You got to keep talking about it.
Listen, I don't think us screaming about it day after day is going to make them move any faster, quite frankly.
True.
So I put my faith in people that are in the executive roles over at PlayStation to work on this and hopefully implement it sooner than later. I don't think that we should hold our breath, though.
No.
So, I mean, I guess if you...
Listen, fucking get PSN name changes first, then we'll talk about the rest of it.
Take the little wins. I guess if you want to keep screaming about it, that's your prerogative.
Yeah.
But I'm probably going to roll my eyes and be like, you're screaming into the ether now. Like, they've acknowledged that people want this, and they'll do it when they're ready to do it.
PSX, here we go. We're fixing everything. Come out and talk about it. We'll see.
We tried to think that E3 was going to be when they talked about PSN IDs, and they didn't.
You're right. We did think that for E3 2009. Yeah, don't worry.
Okay.
Don't hold your breath for anything. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to squad up. This is where one of you writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Give me your question. No, that's not right. Your name, the platform you play on, why you need help in a video game. I read it here. The best friends come and find you. Over on PC today, EscalatorBoy #1863 needs help. Escalator Boy #1863 writes in and says, with the launch of the new World of Warcraft Battle for Azeroth expansion happening today and the introduction of community features within the game, some members of the community are already starting to squad up. Whether you're fighting for the high ideals of the Alliance or for the freedom of the Horde, or if you just want to hang out with other best friends, there's a community already waiting for you. He then put in a whole bunch of links that weren't short links at all, so I'm not going to read those. I'm just going to tell you to hit up Escalator Boy #1863. I imagine on the Kinda Funny Discord and maybe on the Reddit that he can post those links as well for you. I guess I could too, but I'm going to be busy. Ain't that right, Franklin? That's right. 49! Andrea?
Yes, Greg?
We ask people watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. to write in to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screw up as we screwed up so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later. Blah, blah, blah. What did we screw up today?
Today, Zephyr, thank you so much. It's just another compliment on my outfit. So that's very nice. Spasm says, Greg, Double Jeopardy is a defense against
this
being
was a
charged.
Joke. This was a joke. Okay. I'm aware of what Double Jeopardy is, guys.
Didn't seem like it.
But I did it in the MCU voice, you know?
Charles J says, Android wasn't sure if Arcane is big enough to handle two projects at once. They've got two studios, Lyon, France, and Austin, Texas. There you go. Somebody else wrote into that. That was just probably I'm not going to read that one.
Okay.
Well, two people wrote in about it. Greg, you called Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4, not Black Ops 4, when talking about the Black Ops beta.
Good call. Thank you. That's a good. You're wrong.
Both Blackjack and BJ2580.
Blackjack!
My dog Nick 96 says,
from Massachusetts.
He wrote that in there too. The best selling games you read for PSN are actually the most downloaded. I'm not sure if it has to do with actual sales.
Good call. Thank you very much. Keep me honest.
Capitalist Pig followed up with the VR, saying that the list of VR games are not the top sellers, just the most downloaded. All right. Dante the Clerk says, Walking Dead Final Season also came to the Switch. In case you were wanting to play it there. I'm not quite sure what this is. That's for a different Games Daily. You can't do your wrongs for Games Daily from
once
last week.
Once this feature locked and put out there, it's done. Whatever fucking Danny O'Dwyer said years ago, locked in.
Lord of Pwn says, I was the one that submitted the question for the Jason about Bethesda's blacklisting of Kotaku, and Jason said Pete wouldn't give an answer. All right. Oh, maybe I did misspeak. Lord of Pwn says The Elder Scrolls Legends isn't currently available on PS4, so maybe Andrew misspoke. I did. I assumed it was on PS4. So maybe it will never come to PS4.
Ooh.
Do you have some... Oh, wait. Franklin, do you have some news about this? Would you like to contribute?
They just said their announcement at QuakeCon was just that it's going
to
come to consoles later.
Gotcha.
So in case you guys did not hear... Franklin said that at QuakeCon, Bethesda said that it will be coming to consoles later. Because I believe it's currently on iOS and Android and PC. Yes?
You know how I glazed over at QuakeCon in general. I was like, all right, it's
Zyger
cool.
Zyger says, Andrew's Mario Galaxy 2 review is indeed still on YouTube. Can confirm.
Good?
I'm going to pull up now. I haven't watched this thing in forever. I believe I made this review for this week in video games, and I posted it on my personal YouTube channel. And then I, for some reason, never made it private.
Nice.
I have very, very few videos. Apparently, I also did a Madden NFL review.
What year?
8 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this is it.
No, look at that. 4x3.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Didn't see that coming.
Holy crap.
Makes sense, of course, I'm just saying, yeah.
Man. This is me. I'll show this all to you later. This is literally me recording this on my television.
3,000 views, though. That's pretty good. Ladies, that's it, right?
That's it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, each and every weekday, we come to you with the nerdy news you need to know about in the video game world. Watch the show live on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. Watch it later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames. Listen on podcast services around the globe. Tomorrow, I'm joined by Aiden Strahan. That's right. Freelancer extraordinaire coming through to talk about her experiences and do the show with me.
I got to meet her at RTX.
That's where I met her too.
She was really great. And I told her I was bummed that I wasn't going to be here on the day that she was coming in. So I wish her the best of luck. I hope she has a lot of fun in this chair.
I bet she will. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, it's Hunter Bush with Sergio. Cop the lights.